Managata? Os Manumã.
We are dealing with a department here which could function 6 weeks without the head being around the department, according to the report of the apology. Why the report comes so late when it should have come 2 months ago? It only came here yesterday. And the apologies that the DG was out of the department for a period of 6 weeks and was not even aware of a request by this committee to give a better report than the one he came with here more than 2 months ago. So the report only came yesterday, and we have not even had the chance of looking at it. And therefore, that's why you find I asking the DG some questions. Maybe you have not paid attention to those questions, but there were questions regarding his apology. And I don't know how we're going to deal with this matter, because really, something that is unacceptable. It is really unacceptable. Yeah,
Chairperson, I think following the statement from the DG, I'm just worried if the DGD are around him here, who could not act on the instruction of the parliament, and they were saying that no, they are going to wait for him while in hospital. If they are around here, then hey, we're going to have a serious problem. What type of report are we going to get? Because you find that the DG came back and just immediately just rushed on the scene, you know?
Thank you, Honourable Member. But that being the case and that being the situation, I think we give them the chance to report. It is the report that is going to tell us whether there is some substance on issues, or you did it in a rush and forgot certain things which you are not employed for to forget. You should be having quite a supporting infrastructure around yourself, and people should actually be on your support. So let's go into the report and hear whether it has what we expect. Thank you,
Honorable Chairperson and members. Honorable members, there are a few reports. There is a narrative report flowing from the report, the gaps that were identified by the committee. And the committee requested that further clarity be provided on a number of things. There is a narrative report. It covers 5 different areas. The gaps that were identified by committee members on the Comprehensive Rural Development Program. We provide the detail on that. There was a further clarity that was required by the committee on the National Youth Service Corps, the NARISEC program. The narrative report also explains in detail and provides some annexures in regard to that. Thirdly, the committee had also sought further clarity with regard to the completion of surveying of state land. We provide also an annexure providing the detailed report on the work that has been done.
Can I just interrupt you? You know, that's not the type of report we're expecting. I think we must have raised specific points. in our rejection of your report. And we expect you to bring a report to say, on this issue, as it was objected by the committee, this is the following. You know, an executive summary which is going to capture the situation around that particular point. So that it clarifies. But if you do, you are just reading a recitation, a nursery rhyme, I don't know what is that. But really, it is not what we expect. We will expect a comprehensive summary report that is going to capture and, encapsulate everything. What you are reporting, I really don't know how to classify it.
Chair, the report, in my view, I was just reading the subheading of the question. I was not going to the actual summary report.
Did that narration, you were narrating it yourself, give us the report.
Okay. Let us perhaps go to the first detailed report, the presentation that we have projected. The committee has asked about the
document.
Yes, the comprehensive rural development. The recapitalization and development program. I will ask Mr. Masango to present.
Thanks, honourable member. The presentation is on the screen there, and I'm told that also
copies going around. The specific request was the criteria around the selection of the recapitalization and development project. But we felt that maybe let's just give the outline of how the recapitalization and development works. I'm going to go quickly through the 10 slides. The first just talks to the outcome 7, which is part of the responsibility of this department, then the objectives of the recapitalization and development, and then the overview. Then the intervention strategies, the type of strategic partners that we have, the legislation governing of the recap and development, and the criteria, which is the recap process flow. Having said that, the objective of recapitalization and development is to increase production in all our land reform farms to guarantee food security, graduate emerging farmers to commercial farmers, create jobs in a process within the agricultural sector, and to establish rural development monitors.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mugaro.
You are not familiar with this one.
Okay.
You just take a page by page, and when you look into the other page, then you say page two.
Okay.
But I see that this thing here, it doesn't even have pages.
Bottom right there, Chair. Okay. The first page is just a cover. Page 2 is an outline of the presentation, Chair. Okay, now I'm on the third page, which talks to the objectives, the first block on top. On your extreme left, you've got the pictures. The pictures is just to demonstrate to members how the farm looked like before we enter and during the process. And then after we have completed or nearly completion of the project. The upper part, the 5 points, talks to what are the objectives of this strategy or this new program. The lower bottom is the overview of the recap, what it covers. It covers past and future transactions with special focus to all land reform programs. For instance, stringent conditions apply to be issued for those who qualify to avoid creating a culture of entitlement. So we subject to all the beneficiaries to credible business plans so that it's not just a grant released to them and then they see how to do with the money. Not all farms will qualify for that. Farms will be selected based on their potential, informed by the assessment and comprehensive business plan. We send a multitask team of agriculture, ourselves and other partners like Land Bank to go and assess the farm and come up with the report before we can do the funding. Then page 4, which is the next page, source of the budget for recap, it basically the bottom part capitalization, it's a funding element come from the 25% of PLUS members. I'm sure they know what is PLUS Proactive Land Acquisition Strategy, the household grant, which is formerly your LRAD, and then the 25% from Restitution Development Grant. That figure combined together in the past financial year that ended the 31st of March was 900 million. So we're using that fund to assist all the projects. Then we move to page 5, which is the development element. It refers to actual development in the farming, e.g. we do mentoring, capacity building, because in the past we never look after the beneficiaries to see if they are well trained. They can do their soft skills like financial management and all stuff. We also do infrastructural development. If you look at your, again, extreme left, you will see an irrigation scheme there, which is part of the infrastructural development, how the farm was found and during the process and after the process. Credible, like I said, we rely on credible and bankable development plan that inform basic guiding tool to measure the profitability of the enterprise. We don't just pump the money, but we look to say, if we pump this money, are there going to be returns? Because if, for instance, you talk of flashback, all the beneficiaries need to pay rental. So we need to assist them to be able to pay back to the state the rental of using that farm. Business plan gives guidance in appointing mentors and strategic partners. The business plan gives us a clue as to what kind of a strategic partner we must bring to assist the beneficiary. Bulk funds are directed to infrastructural development as against the copying. Good governance will be key to ensure that power balance amongst partners and the strategic partner. We monitor them back so that there's that a good relationship between the strategic partners and the beneficiaries. We don't want a situation whereby because the strategic partner is the most skilled person end up running the farm on itself and then the beneficiary becomes the spectator. We ensure that there's always that involvement by the beneficiary. He basically do the lot of work and the strategic partner basically guides the process. Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries are the key players in this. They provide all the expertise that we don't have in the department in order to manage this farm. Different farms obviously will require different interventions depending on what is on the farm. Then we'll move to page 6. The page 6 is the intervention to ensure sustainability. This will basically talk to the partnership and the mentors. Partners or mentorship, these can be individual or companies of any race. The strategic partner should share risk with the beneficiary, e.g. capital investment. In most of the capital-intensive project members, what we do, because the state cannot finance everything, we look at the business plan and say, and ask the strategic partner, what is it, what equity can you bring on the table? And then the department also bring a certain equity on the table. This is to ensure that if the strategic partner believes in the business plan, he will or she will take the risk, which means that once he put the capital on the project, he also demonstrates that he's willing to take the risk and is assuring us that his farm will be farmable. That's basically what we do. Other strategic partners may bring goodwill or their corporal asset, which means they can bring tractors and other stuff to ensure that the farm is workable. The risk profile is important and should form part of the due diligence. There's no business without risk. So we also look, ask them what are the risk factors of entering into this business, and they sign off on those. Type of strategic partners can be co-management, share equity schemes, which are mainly in the Western Cape area, and contract farming. The next page, which is page 7, it's got a picture, a tricycle that demonstrates how the funding model works. In the, you've got a tripartite alliance in that picture. You've got beneficiaries on the left. You've got the department, which is ourselves, and then you've got strategic partners. What the beneficiaries bring, risk sharing, equity, corporate governance, legal and audit compliance, and funding. Then the department do the funding, we do monitoring from part of the NUCOS, which is a kind of a company that will form between the beneficiaries and the strategic partner. Strategic partners also bring the same resources as the beneficiaries. But what do we do as a department? Once we receive the business plan, in the first year, because farming is very intensive, we provide 100% of what they require in terms of the business plan. In the second year, because now they start reaping their returns, we withdraw 20% and we give only 80%. third year it's 60%, 40-20, so we're gradually pulling out in terms of our funding model with the assumption that everything is now in place, they are able to reap the harvest, sell, access the market, and then do their own reinvestment from the money that they've generated going forward. Because we've got a lot of farms, we need to move out quickly to assist other beneficiaries as well. Basically, what we do, why we come up with this model, we believe that it's not only members, the productivity of the farm, but it's the access to the market. It's one thing to ensure that the farm is productive, but it's another thing to ensure that the service provider knows exactly where the product is going to after it has been harvested. Those are the conditions that we enter into with the strategic partners. What governs these members? It's a land reform provision, page 8, on slide 8. The legislative that is governing the recapitalization and development policy is the land reform provision of Land and Acquisition Act, 1993, which we call normally Act 126, the Restitution and Land Rights Act of 1994, and the extension of security tenure. So combined, those are the legislative governing the recapitalization and development. It's because you're assisting different forms of land reform. Like I said, if you've got FLAS, you've got LRAD, you've got restitution and others that we are assisting. Then going to page 9, which is the process flow. How do we get to all this? Again, on your right, the first thing is the identification of a distressed project. Unfortunately, we realize that most of them are distressed. We engage with the beneficiaries of their needs, and then identification and discussion of the possible interventions with the beneficiaries depends. Cropping is different from livestock, so the interventions are different. Recruitment and the appointment of the partners for the identification of projects. You may notice that around October last year, there's been a lot of adverts calling for retired farmers and all the strategic partners who are in the agricultural field to come in and register with us so that they can assist these people. Development of comprehensive intervention plan or a business plan, that's where we start. Presentation and the endorsement of the proposed business plan. Once they respond and select the particular farms that they are interested in, we call them to sit down with us and then they present. They present to both us, agriculture, and the beneficiaries so that we all agree on the thing. Therefore, we prepare a contract, and then number 7 becomes the signing of the contract because there should be something that is governing all of us. Then we create a legal entity. It's basically legal entity. What we are saying, when you're talking money, there's always issues. So we normally allow the beneficiaries and the strategic partners to create a legal entity where the funds are going to be channeled so that all of them, they can be accountable. And our project management team come later to ensure that issues of the compliance, corporate governance are dealt with within that legal entity. Then we release those monies to them. Then the implementation of the proposed business plan take place. Like I said, in the process of them working, we do go back and check whether they have meetings, because they must have meetings. For them to buy implements, for them to buy anything, there must be that sign of community resolution or beneficiary resolution so that they agree and they take accountability of all the things that they are putting on the farm. Not that next time when you come, they said no, but the strategic partner has been doing his own thing or the beneficiary was not complying with this and this. We monitor that very strictly. That's basically that with the recapitalization and development and all the other aspects. Thanks, members and chair. I'm just reminded here, Chair, that we were requested to submit the list. We submitted the list. In one committee, we were told that we're wasting a lot of papers. I created the list, but because we had to submit the report first, we had to send it electronically. Members, I will leave this with the parliamentary office at the disk of all the projects that are recapitalized.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I'm sure it makes sense to everybody now. This is what we really wanted to hear. That is the report, members. Before, I would just like to ask you a question before we enter into it. How often does your management check on the project that is on? How often? Yeah. Yes, Commissioner?
Thank you, Chairperson. It seems that you've been changing my questions.
Thanks, Chairperson. On page number 7, I'm seeing the table there, a triangle, where you start with 100% business plan funded by DRDO up to stage number 5. How many are those at stage number 6, which you can say, because at stage number 6 is where you can say these people can move with their own. They need no assistance or from yourself. How many are they now, if you can say that? No, we can say that in our country we've worked with this. How many are these projects? And then page number 9, you talk about the distress project. After identifying this project, what do you do about it? You check that no, they must have meetings. It's a matter of having meetings. Or what do you do? Do you check on the minutes? What plan has been made? Just try to clarify us on that issue. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yeah. Okay. Again, I would like to know, this document, does it deal only with one specific project, or it deals with different projects? Because according to the pictures here, it has a before, during, and after. And where are these projects? In which provinces are they found? Yes, thank you. Back to the department if anybody wants to answer.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, maybe let me start with the last one. Where are these projects and the pictures?
Why not the first one? All right, go on.
The detailed information on the project are in that document, and that is, like I said, the Chair. But maybe just to take through the pictures, you might have heard of the first pilot that started in November last year. We started in Bloemfontein in a specific farm called Cecilia, where we had about 11 beneficiaries. And most of these pictures are from the surrounding area of the Free State, where we started the pilot project. We'll improve, Chair. Next time, maybe when we present, we'll have a specific name of the project linked to the DISC so that you know exactly where they are. Then, how do we often do the monitoring? There's a team that does monitoring and evaluation. I can safely tell you now that because we are at the year end, they are all over in the farms because they first need to count the assets, what we have bought, and everything. They basically do a bi-weekly, but they do sampling exercise because we've got many of these projects, about 1,400 projects, which is very costly. Have team all over. However, we also have our own provincial officials, which we call project officers, that from time to time they entertain the issues that emanate from the farms. Mm-hmm. That goes also to the issue of the meetings. It's not just that they must have meetings. The nature of the grant system dictates that there should be resolution. They should agree on things that they are buying. So it's basically, they may have their own constitution that dictates when they must meet. However, if they have to acquire something or there must be money that needs to be released, we need that resolution that says, yes, all of us, we agree that we need a specific item. That's when the meetings come. So there are those meetings that deals with acquisition and those that deals with their normal corporate governance issues. Page 7, how many at that stage that they are already existing? Since the project started in November, as much as there are some of the projects that are already trading, however, they are still under recap because in farming, you need a certain time to babysit them up until they fully graduated. So anything can go wrong if you exit in the first year of the production. So we said even though not all the 5 years we are releasing money, but we just put them under the microscope up until they all graduate or mature and then they exit. Identification. Members, yes, the first thing is to do identify the distress farm, and then the next thing is to agree on how to treat them because they differ. Some of them, they are so bad in such a way that you need really to get strategic partners who can start afresh and recapitalize them. Some of them can be done within the budget that is available within the department. But all in all, it depends on the willingness in most of the time from the strategic partners to assist. Like if you talk about sugarcane is not something that you can do as a department alone because you need to ensure that the millers agree on taking the take-off and all the stuff. So the identification tells us in the business plan which mode of intervention we must address each and every specific farm. I think I've covered all of them.
Yes.
As a follow-up, let's say you start from year one, year two. At year three, I'm going to talk to Angasa Kwasi Kwendaluti. Can't do anything. What will you do about that person? And how many do you have of those people who have started, but at the same time, they disappear from the scene?
PG will have to help me on the way.
Members, can you just take some more questions? Is anyone who wants to ask anything? Just one of the words.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I'm coming halfway through the story. I wrote to the minister and asked, specifically from the Free State Province, how many farms the project had been abandoned or were not farming at all. There were something like 30 farms, this is just in the Free State Province, that had been abandoned totally, and something like 170, so in total we're looking at about 200 farms. The other 170 were, the people on the farms weren't farming at all. Now that's just one province. So if you multiply that with a multiply, in fact I don't say it's the same in all the provinces, but certain other provinces are going to be worse, you're going to end up with a couple of thousand farms like that. How long is it estimated? I know this is a very difficult question. If you've got to start at some point. Now, a lot of these weren't just straight commercial farms. They were piggeries, chicken farms, all sorts of type of farms. How long do you estimate that it's going to take to work through the whole lot to give the recapitalization development program? In other words, how many do you anticipate doing a year? Thanks.
More questions. I want to know if there is a project, it is there and it is being manned and it in the process becomes a struggling project and department puts some more money into the project. What are the measures that you put in place to see to it that this project is going to perform better than what it was, and the criteria you use to put more money on that particular project. Two, you talk about the strategic partners. That is very important. How are these strategic partners being selected?
and what are the criteria you use to determine this is a strategic partner that can be linked with this particular project? And that is, if that is the case, what measures do you put in place to monitor this strategic partner? Any more questions? All right. In the meantime, you can answer those.
The first question, Honorable Chair, was what do we do when somebody, we've got a system where we put them almost in an incubator for a period of 5 years. Mm-hmm. The question was, this one decides that he doesn't want to do anything, he drops out. What is easier with, because we've got many products, we've got farms that we've acquired where we've given people title deeds. Mm-hmm. There are farms which we have bought where the state is the holder of the title deed. Where the state is the holder of the title deed, it's always easier when that person exits, the lease is terminated, we sign a lease with somebody who's willing and prepared to farm. There is always difficulty with those who are holders of title deeds, because they may drop out, but they may also refuse to let somebody else come and take over the land. Mm. That is why we've got many conflicts in those particular projects. We have to do a lot of firefighting. The other question was, how many do we intend doing? And there was a question by the Honorable Member regarding the Free State. The reason why the department decided to come up with this recapitalization and development program, it was after the realization, following a number of studies over a period of time, that many of these land reform projects were failing. That was the starting point. We did the studies from 95, from 2005, 2007. Mm-hmm. In fact, in 2008, all the farms that were owned by the state, we did an assessment of each and every one of them. So we were able to rate them to say, this one is green. If it is green, it is working. These people or these farmers need minimum support. It was yellow. It's struggling a little bit. If no assistance comes, it will collapse. But if they get a little bit of assistance, they will carry on. Some were red, meaning that they had collapsed. The farmers have themselves walked away, abandoned the farm. So there was that criteria of analyzing and studying each and every one of them. Over a period of 3 years, we studied over 3,000 projects that were all at different stages. Others working, as I'm saying, others were struggling but needed support, others had completely collapsed. So our starting point was that we've got to obviously work within our baseline allocation. When we started with the recapitalization and development, we said over the next MTEF, starting from 2009-10, we said we'll recapitalize 1,407 projects. But there's obviously more projects that are out there than those that we've identified. The number was limited in terms of the resources that are available at our disposal. But to date, I think we have over 411 projects that we have assisted countrywide. We still have the remainder of over 1,000 that we must focus on going forward. We are hoping with better selection in the future, there will be a fewer number of them that collapse, because in the past, the selection criteria was not that good. Sometimes there were too many people in one project. Sometimes there were people who were formerly farm workers who thought they can farm. Now, when they are on the farm, they suddenly realize that farming is actually very tough. This is not what they want. People move off the land. We found some farms being abandoned completely. The evaluation, how do we determine whether this farm needs to be assisted? When we develop the policy, we knew exactly, we have a database of all of these farms, where they are across the country. And therefore, when each one of our district offices does an assessment, the first phase, the first step is obviously the identification of a project that needs help. Two, it is an assessment, an agricultural assessment. What kind of help does this project need? What is its status? Is the farmer willing to be assisted? Is the farmer still, or are the farmers still on the farm? Then a business plan is developed, on the basis of which then the department appoints a strategic partner and releases the money for assisting. So there's a detailed exercise, identification of the farm. The second phase is the assessment of the farm. Then there's what we call due diligence exercise to determine how much money is going to be required to make this farm farmable. And then the strategic partner, together with the farmer, is brought on board in terms of that triangle Mr. Masang was showing. Then we get involved. Obviously, we've just started. Selection of a strategic partner. We've got three types of strategic partners. There are mentors. These are farmers, commercial farmers who are in the field, who are willing to assist. We found that there's quite a few of them. We advertised, we accredited them. The second one will be your old corporations, the co-ops, who are currently assisting white commercial farmers. Many of them are working with us to empower black farmers. The third type of strategic partners are commodity organizations. You've got your timber industries, your Mondis and your Sapis. You've got the deciduous fruit companies. There's plenty of them, your Cape Span and others. You've got your sugar industry. You've got the millers. You've got a whole host of others who have a vested interest in making sure that those farms are working, because the success and sustainability of their own businesses is dependent on land reform farms functioning. For instance, if you are a sugar industry, you are a miller, your mill is going to stand empty if we have acquired land around your mill and all this land is not working. These farms are not working. So it means that your mill is not going to function optimally. It can actually lead to job losses. So they come with their own resources, they come with their own extension officers, they come with their own money and their expense to partner with the beneficiaries, and then, like Mr. Masango said, they guarantee offtake. In other words, they buy the sugar, the cane, from those farmers. We've seen a similar model with the timber industry. We hope to expand the whole model nationally. Obviously, we've got to follow the Treasury regulations and the Public Finance Management Act. We've got to advertise, we've got to accredit people, they must be on our database, there must be a binding contract between the department and the strategic partner. But what is important, the strategic partner must be an expert in that field. You can't find them, somebody who knows about dairy, they know about fruit, they know about timber. You've got to know about that particular field so that you are able to provide expertise and support to the farmers. Thanks, Chair.
Any further questions? Yes, Commissioner.
The TG just printed to me. What happened to a situation, Director General, where you said, here's a person who comes with a business plan to farm sometimes on the CERN, and then only to find that, no, this can't happen. Is he or she allowed to amend the proposal while in the business?
Any further questions? No more questions. Thank you. Can answer, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Oh, definitely, you are allowed to alter your business plan. Sometimes, initially, people say they walk into a farm, you can farm various things, but then this person just focuses on one thing. Many farmers are now diversifying on their farm. They plant a little bit of lucerne there. If the soil is allowed, they can plant maize or some other thing. That is why we've got strategic partners and mentors who have got the expertise, who can determine the soil capability of that particular farm.
Thank you. Is there anything from your side again? All right, in the absence of any further thing, I will suggest this, that I'm sure you have been noting down the questions that we've been asking here. And because the suspicions was already created that the department is not giving us the reality of the situation, I would suggest that the answers that have been given us is committed into writing and transmitted to us. But I would like you, your answers must be following a question. On question so and so, then you go on like that. You make things even easier for yourself so that tomorrow you can always make reference. And so that we would like to see all answers that have been delivered here to be committed in writing. And this document that I stopped the DG from, you know, dealing with it, I would like you to go back into it and give us the summary of your thinking about this.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Yeah.
Let me start with the first question that has been asked by the committee under comprehensive rural development. In this document, we attempted to do exactly what the chairperson is saying now. The question must be followed by a response. That's what we try to do here.
Mm.
Under the comprehensive rural development, question A was, does the department fund all CRDP projects by itself, or is it assisted by other departments?
Mm-hmm.
Our response is no. We don't fund all CRDP projects on our own, but we work together with other spheres of government.
Mm-hmm.
We always make an example with the project that we started with in Muyeshe. We had a budget of 40 million when we started. We only spent 10 million. But if you go to Miesha today, you look at the development that has happened there, you will see that the Department of Communications has come in, they've put a post office, you will see that there's over 200 houses, you will see that there's boreholes, there's a satellite police station. All of those things were not provided by us. Other departments do come on board. It's happening elsewhere, whether you are dealing with roads, whether you are dealing with the dams and so on. The following question was, why are there no projects in Gauteng? At the time the department was here, there was no CRDP projects yet in Gauteng. But they are now projects. There are four sites in Gauteng. In Devon, there's another site called Hepworth, Bantubonke, Mamelo, Kudum, and Kwaso Kulumi, Mfuleni, Western Area, and Marafon. So they are now rural development sites in Gauteng. In the past, many people were saying, you know, there are no rural areas in Gauteng, it's all urban, but indeed there are rural areas in Gauteng. The third question under comprehensive rural development was, when will the household food garden be rolled out throughout the country? you will see that we have them on our strategic plan for the financial year 2010-12. We are planning to have 1,800 household gardens across the country in various district municipalities. The fourth question on the CRTP was, what impact has the department had on the lives of the people who wear CRTP projects? We will have to evaluate each and every one of the project. The CRTP has got three phases. One, the first phase is to meet the basic needs. Obviously, when we go to each site, we've got to work with local people, including taking some of them, paying them a stipend of about 60 rand a day to work with us, to profile their own community so that we understand their problems better. We've been to projects where there's been no access roads, there are access roads. There have been irrigation schemes that have not been working. In some instances, they are now working. In some places, there was no police station. There is now a police station, both in Limpopo and Northern Cape. There was no water. We have provided JoJo tanks in some of them. Some of the projects are ongoing. So in a nutshell, we try to impact on the first phase of the CRTP, which is meeting the basic needs, providing that which is most basic, but is not there in a particular locality. The plan is to move to the second phase. The second phase is enterprise development, so that through the projects implemented by government in that particular area, there could be job creation. There is already job creation in some of the wards where we are working. For instance, we have different co-ops now across the country that are producing a whole number of things that they are selling in different municipalities. Some of the people are selling their fresh produce to the market. The fifth question was, does the department collaborate with provincial and local government when rolling out the project? Indeed, it does. But cooperative governance has always been a very, very big challenge for government. So there is cooperation. We have, in the CRTP system itself, we have come up with what we call the CRTP management system. What it basically means is that at a national level, the president is the national champion of the CRTP. The minister is a key driver at a national level. The premier at a provincial level becomes the champion, and so does, I mean, the district mayor at a district level. What we have now done, as part of trying to improve the implementation, we have set up what we call the implementation forum in terms of the outcome-based approach, where every 3 months, the minister and the MECs of rural development in the provinces, rural development and agriculture, and district mayors meet to assess progress in terms of implementation. Those reports are then compiled. They are sent to the presidency, who coordinate all of those responses of those reports. They go to the cabinet committee. From cabinet committee, they once approved, they go to cabinet. So we now are on the second phase of reporting in May. The minister must again submit a report to the executive, just to determine what progress are we making in terms of the targets that we have set ourselves, including the household gardens that we are talking about and how they are impacting on the people on the ground. NARISEC. That was the second question on NARISEC. What were the payment challenges within NARISEC? We found that initially when we started, even with the recruitment, some of the people had to be assisted to have IDs. Because to open a bank account, you need to have an ID. But also, because we're paying stipends, some of the participants in the program wanted to withdraw the money, and others were complaining about the bank charges and so on and so on. So we had some challenges, but also we had to use the internal government system. Your bus system, you've got to capture it. The payments have got to be captured 4 days before the money gets reflected into the account. We were dealing with, at the time, about 5,000 people. So it was quite a big challenge. In some instances, we delayed there was a delay in the money reflecting in the account of some of these participants. And but we have resolved all those teething problems now. What is the department's plan on the NARICSEC recruits once they are trained? The NARICSEC program will run over a two-year period with different sets of training. The idea is that as people get trained in terms of discipline, they're given artisan skills, they will continue to work together with the department in their own villages to help with development. But others may decide that I have got skills now that I never had before. I'm a plumber. I will go and look for a job elsewhere. I'm a bricklayer. Skills that I never had before. I'm going to go and look for a job elsewhere. So these people can either be self-employed, they can go with the skills that they have, they can be employable elsewhere, but otherwise the department would look at working together with them going forward in their own villages, because we want by 2040 to have presence in almost all rural wards across the country. So they are going to become a very critical component of the implementation of the CRTP. The third question on the CRTP, why is there no NARICSEC in KwaZulu-Natal, and why did the training only take place in the Western Cape? In KwaZulu-Natal, the challenge was they were running their own youth program. And it was already designed. There were gaps between their program and NARICSEC. For instance, their program, the youth ambassador program, they're paying 120 rand as a stipend, and we are paying 60 rand. So we had to work together with the province to try and align it. We are getting very close now. To working together so that there could be an uptake in KwaZulu-Natal for the enrollment of NARICSEC youngsters in that province. The training in the West, why training in the Western Cape? We have been working with all the FETs. About July in 2009, we met with several FETs with a view of trying to reach agreement, work with them in partnership so that they can provide a training. At the time we required to send youngsters to the FETs, only four FETs that were available were in the Western Cape. The others were not available at the time. But the minister has worked quite tirelessly together with the MECs to identify other FETs that can work together with the department to train more people. Train more youngsters. The information, the third question, big question, was with regard to the survey of state land. The question was, has the department completed the surveying of state land? The answer is no, the department has not. There is a plan on the table to complete the surveying. We've had to answer a parliamentary question in this regard, with regard to the completion of the surveying of state land. What has happened, however, now is that we have got a report where the Office of the Chief Surveyor General has identified all parcels of state land throughout the country. Where are they? How many parcels they are per province? Obviously, there's a project. The project is being rolled out in the various provinces where surveying is ongoing and is unlikely to be completed before the end of 2030. But there's a desktop analysis that has been completed. At least we know what we are chasing now. We know where all state land parcels are. In the past, we did not even know. Now we know with the desktop analysis that has been done. The fourth question related to the CFO, the slide it was slide number 6 that was indicating that there was under expenditure under the land reform program that was put on hold to cater for restitution court orders, and this had resulted in underspending on land reform. Yes, there was a rollover which was approved by National Treasury in the previous financial year. The rollover was 495 million. We followed the normal processes of approval to National Treasury. We were grateful that the money was made available because as soon as it was made available, we were also able to spend the money in the following financial year. The other question relating to the budget was on restitution and land reform program for spending. What are the consequences of the over and underspending? The commission did not underspend. As we say, it was running short of money. So we made sure that also that they did not overspend by making money available from the land reform program. And the money that then National Treasury then agreed to roll over 495 million, where there was under expenditure as a result of the shifting of the fund. Again, on restitution, this is the big one with regard to the accuracy of information. Chairperson, with us, we have a project plan that we have developed and has been approved by the minister. To make sure that just like the committee is concerned with the accuracy of the number of outstanding claims, the department is equally concerned. We felt that we can no longer just rely on getting information in bits and pieces. In 1 year, in our annual report, we say there's so many claims. In another period, we say there's so many claims. We have now decided, with the instruction from the minister, to set up a detailed project plan, which will, among other things, if I don't have to present all of everything here, which will, among other things, go to each and every province, identify all the files in terms of restitution claims, scan all of the documents so that no claimant says my claim is lost. The department can't process my claim because the claim is lost. We convert all of this information, it gets captured in a system, it becomes electronic. We no longer depend on paper records, but we also have electronic records. This exercise we are going to do all over the country, but it's not just limited to restitution. We said if we are going to roll it all throughout the country, we must also include land reform projects and the file relating to land reform. So it is going to be a massive project over a long period of time. Because we want to be able to report to Parliament, to report accurately, so that we do not come at different times and report different figures. That is the conclusion that we have come to, that we need to put in place this very big project that is going to cost almost 26 million to put together and implement. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, thank you, DG. Let's look at the position between your department, the provincial government, as well as the local government. In relation to intergovernmental relationship, in your endeavor, there has to be some involvement with either of these two tiers, but we don't hear you mentioning any of those, but
to us, it should be very important that you work with the provincial as well as the local government on issues of land. The other thing is there is also, according to our knowledge, one department which is the biggest landlord, and that is the Department of Defense. You know very well, if you were there when people were forcibly removed from their places to some remote areas, most of the beneficiary of that particular process was the Department of Defense. Now, have your department ever undertook any audit that will expose how much land does the Department of Defense have under the present, what are they using it for? These are questions that you can answer now, but you must commit them into writing, because we'll have to go back and check, and even check with the Sisulu and tell us. You must be able to tell us how much land does her department own and what is it being used for. Yes, is there any more question? Yes,
from the answer on this submission, did you put the answer briefly that in future we'd like to suggest such answers like the plan is on the table. We are it's better to put that on such a day we met the province of KwaZulu-Natal to deal about 1, 2, 3. The following meeting will be on such a day. But if we were, or like we say, for example, as you said, the garden, the garden was rolled out, the planning, or it is on our plan, but where, we don't know. And the issue of KwaZulu-Natal has already said that no, we said when. Next type of question. It reduced the weight of the answers given, more especially DG, you were explaining very nicely. But when you come to those who are all again.
Thank you, Honorable Mokubela. Honorable Magad, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My question is with regards to the, to the departmental plans, Honorable Sec. You are saying here there are critical skills. I'll take agriculture. You know, there are these areas, if we are really dealing with that development, there are these areas that have irrigation schemes before, that Ngoha, Mzimkulu, you know, there are schools that are located around there, and you know, those areas are becoming, they are dying now, and yet there are young ones that are around there. Why can't you give them skills and develop young ones so that that part is really developed? If you develop the youth there, you will get what you want, because these are deep rural areas, and there are these irrigation schemes that are dying. There are no plants, there are no what there, and yet there were resources, government resources that were there. Thank you.
Honorable Worth, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I was going to mention that same thing. When we went on the oversight visit, our committee went and had a look at that dam. There you've got this massive dam with holding ponds. It's all run by gravitational, and obviously in the previous administration called it, if you like, the Transkei, there was an aerial photograph in the one office where we saw it was green, lush all over. Today it's total devastation. There used to be dairies. They've been stripped. There's nothing left there. There used to be butcher shops. Nothing left. All stripped out. There's whole little towns, like little villages, where obviously the administrative personnel used to stay. They've just been stripped. Garage doors. We saw one that was sawn half open so a dog could run in and out. It's unbelievable, the devastation. Yet these holding ponds are there. It's all run by gravitation. Why can't that system be resuscitated? And every time we'd ask them, they would say, no, it's Department of Agriculture. The other one would say, no, it's rural development. And the other one would say, no, it's Mtata or the provincial government that's holding up. Why? And I believe that's just one of several other irrigation schemes. And, you know, I'm just going clearly by what I never saw previously. I just saw the aerial photograph there. And compared to that, there is absolutely nothing left. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Worth. DG, I think if you listen to these questions, these are very salient questions. They touch the core of what your department should actually be doing. And we don't hear from your report to say, our department went to such and such a project, like what Honorable Worth is saying. We found it being like this and that. And, you know, we have seen quite a number of things. And because of our department, this is what we have done, and this is what it is now. We haven't heard that. And as he says, and you know, according to what we heard, these projects were vibrant during the Bantustan system. But today, you get there, you find people sitting around there drinking. You come there, you see people sitting around there hungry in an area which was actually breadbasket of the community there. What is your department? These are really serious questions. And we would like people really to pull up your sleeves. We are in a complete different situation now, where delivery has to be seen, not has to be promised. People want to see delivery. People want to see change just around themselves. They don't want to go somewhere and see change. They want to see it here in front of them. They want to see their life of yesterday different than their life of today. This is the concern of this parliament. This is the concern of this committee. And we have a department which has, you know, responsibility to do these things. But discrepancy of your report indicates that very little has been done. If I can just say that. Very little has been done. Because if you report actually what you have been doing. You are not reporting what you think you are going to do. And once you report what you think you are going to do, you missed it. Report what you have done and the results thereof. I don't know whether we understand one another, Mr. DG. Please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
That's the last question. Has the Department of Defense submitted any land to Department of Defense? Do they own any land, Department of Defense?
Thank you, can answer.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the question. On the first question that was asked by the Honorable Chair on the issue of working together, cooperative governance, working together with province and other departments. Chair, I tried to say we have what is called an implementation forum.
Mm-hmm.
National, provincial, and local, represented by district municipalities. the political oversight implementation forum in terms of the outcome-based approach is chaired by the minister. The one that comprises of officials, DGs, and heads of departments and municipal managers is chaired by the director general. So indeed, it is a new system. As you know, the outcome-based approach was only introduced by government last year. So that's what we have put in place. There has already been two meetings. And we hope through that implementation forum, coordination of implementation and actual implementation itself would get better. On the question of the land owned by the National Department, by the Department of Defense, indeed, they do own a lot of land in various parts of the country. In some of the land, there are existing army bases. In some of the cases, the sites were used for army bases, but they are no longer in those instances used for that purpose. I've come across quite a number of army bases that are under land claim, because like the chairperson rightfully said, in those communities, in those areas, there were people who were forcibly removed from that land. In some instances, that land is not restorable, because the base is still there, it's operational, and there's massive army infrastructure. The question of the audit, we have not done the audit ourselves to audit their land, but we do have a team comprising of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform and the Department of Public Works, because there's another major landowner, and much of the land that is used for army bases for defense purposes is registered under the Department of Public Works. So we have that exercise. That exercise of doing that audit of that land is already being implemented, working together with the Department of Public Works. I do acknowledge from Honorable Makubela the need for us to be specific, in responding to the question and the timeline. We will endeavor to do so. NARISEC, the plans for the NARISEC for the department. I think this is perhaps, I will just explain broadly, but on the plans around irrigation schemes, I will ask my colleague Fus to respond specifically. The plan for NARISEC countrywide is that we will recruit 4 young people per ward, rural ward, not the village. But because the intake of NARISEC is ongoing, so the numbers will increase over a period of time. So we are hoping that around the number of irrigation schemes that we have across the country, we will have young people from those rural areas who are part and parcel of NARISEC, but also who will actively participate in the work that we'll be doing around irrigation schemes. But just on this plan around the irrigation scheme, on the points that have been made, I would like my colleague just to say what is the plan of the department in terms of revitalizing of irrigation schemes across the country up to 2014.
Thanks, Chief. Honorable members, let me confirm again to say recapitalization and development cuts across the irrigation schemes. Last year, we've already identified 27 of them nationally, and there are plans. We're working with the provincial departments of agriculture and national DAF to do that. But maybe just to answer some of the issues that we have raised. There's a great potential in the irrigation schemes that we have identified in terms of food security and the job creation. But we have visited 7 in the last financial year doing the business plan and the assessment. I can safely tell you, within Gog, we've got serious problems here where communities are not well organized. There are factions within the communities. But what compounded the problem in the irrigation scheme, for some reasons, we came across a lot of service providers who want to assist the communities, influencing the communities around this. But we are working on that with the Provincial Department of Agriculture and the local mayors to see exactly who are the genuine people that we can work with in order to revitalize Ngqura. We went to in Mpumalanga, PIVA, and the Langelihle the irrigation schemes. There, the problem, when we arrive, when we do the business plan, we realize that most of the farmers who used to manage these irrigation schemes are in debt with land bank. They started these irrigation schemes around 50 million. Now the debt has escalated to 64 million. We're busy negotiating with land bank to see how best do we address in order to go forward. But again, there are problems of, I think the member asked to say, what if the business plan says you want to do it, but the soil doesn't allow, you need to change on that. We realize that all of these people are forced to do sugarcane, but if you look at the soil in the area, it's no more worth it to do the sugarcane. The farm is not going to be productive. So those are the things that we're dealing with. We went to Taung. We see the Taung irrigation scheme. The problem with Taung irrigation scheme is that you've got a co-op, the white co-op in the Val Harbour area. So whatever you do with the Taung irrigation scheme, you must talk to them in terms of the water rights. So we've got the challenges that we came across in all these irrigation schemes when we wanted to revitalize them. But all those challenges are manageable. It's just that it's time that is not on our side in order to ensure that people get those irrigation schemes up and running. There is also an issue of communication, that we don't communicate frequently our activities that we are doing. Hence, members, they don't know about all these initiatives that we are doing behind the scenes. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Touching the Taung community, in one of our visits last year, actually around that area, the Falhas, which is adjacent to Taung, of that big community, and the Falhas consist of about, if you can say, more than 500 white farmers, it will be too much. But they are the beneficiary of that biggest scheme, according to what we hear. It's one of the biggest irrigation schemes. The biggest community next to that is sitting and just, you know, spectating as to what is going on next to them. That is, you know, one thing that is not acceptable. And we came in our report. We made a very strong recommendation that the department must actually go into there. It is something that that can be done. It is something that can even address quite a number of issues. Number of issues like unemployment. Number of issues like anything. If you can teach people to use a piece of land they have and give them water and teach them and manage them, you know, to a point where they understand what they do. And, you know, during the Mputetwana government, that whole Taung area was very productive in terms of food. But I see even where they used to plow and produce crop, they put houses down. What does the Department of Land Affairs do to take such a productive land and put houses on top of it? And the other one is the Spitzkop Dam. You know the Spitzkop Dam? It is also around that area of the Falhas. But that dam is built on the other side of the Falhas. The Falhas is actually the name of the river that runs there. And it is built on the side of the community. It's a big dam, and I can't just remember very well the caretaker there. He told us about something like 60 kiloliters of water, something 60 million or something like that, but it's a big volume, and the water stands there in front of that big community on top there. And this dam stretches, you know, the way it is big, from the front stoops of the community, but they can't even drink a cup of water from it. It is only used to
to supply irrigation water to the commercial farmers across the other side, while this on the other on the side of the disadvantaged people. Now, we also wrote about that and recommended that this is something that can be done, you know, even just by tomorrow, we can start doing something. Negotiating for water that is there shouldn't take long, unlike negotiating water that you're still going to bring here. It's there already. The land is there, the people are there, the water is there, the sun is there. What is so difficult in negotiating and reaching an agreement and getting the people from the surrounding area to occupy them to do something for their own self? And that should be the responsibility of the department. We have also identified Snowdrift. I'm from Snowdrift. I'm actually one of the beneficiaries. But if you go there now, you'll be surprised. And Snowdrift was one of the first, actually the first community who claimed the land. Right? Yeah, but I mean, this is an issue of intergovernmental relationship. If they, as a Department of Rural Development, raise this issue with the Department of Water Affairs, Department of Water Affairs must come to the party. You see, we have raised these issues, and you can't develop a rural area without water. The water is there. So you must take it up with the Department of Water Affairs, which makes it more, you know, more easier, and it carries even our recommendation, it gives it more weight, you see. So these are the issues that can be done, and we feel that they can be done, and I don't know whether there's any more questions.
Lastly, Chairperson, Malenge irrigation scheme in KZN, Mzimkulu, KZN. Malenge irrigation scheme. Take note of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Magarla. I don't know whether there's still anything from your side, DG. Can you probably give more clarity, DG? Don't say that I'm overtaxing you. On this issue of restitution, this is the last paragraph of your report. Just give us more, probably if you have some figures and the outstanding claims and all these things. The last page.
Chairperson, the point number five, there, 5A, the committee had asked about accurate restitution information. Our response, Chair, was that we've come to realize that the information at our disposal is incorrect and inaccurate. For us to provide the committee with the figures will be misleading the committee.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have come to that conclusion ourselves that it is inaccurate.
Inaccurate, yeah.
And therefore, we have got a project plan that has already started to go around the country to our offices to physically count each file, to count files, to scan every document, to record it, so that we can then say to the committee, there were so many claims lodged altogether since 1994 up to the cutoff date.
So the statistics that you gave in your annual report was just a prefabricated. Let's agree that we will pardon you.
Yes.
Say yes, thank you. Right. Now go on.
So it is that project plan that we have put in place so that when we present figures in Parliament, we know we're talking about something accurate.
So I'm appealing to you that in future don't come with thumbsuck answers here in this committee. Our responsibility as a committee is to see these things really working and working for our people. And our government has got a system of having a department like your department with the head of department, which is you. And you have just now admitted that the statistics that you gave on your annual report was a thumbs up. Statistics. And I'm saying, all right, we pardon you for that, but next time we will take you to task. We will show you the massive power this committee has in dealing with people who can sit down, write, I wouldn't like to say lies, write untruth to this committee. We are not here to serve our personal interests. We are here to serve the interests of the broader community outside, that is the South African nation. And we cannot be sitting here and be receiving information that is not verified. So I'm appealing to you very strongly, and I think this would also be the responsibility of the chairperson. She would also, if she was here, maybe even said it with more emphasis than myself, to say, please don't do it anymore. If you don't have information, come to us, tell us. But you must then also give us a reasonable reason why don't you have it. I am saying, I'm sure what you see today is what you can apply in your department. When I am going back to your 6 weeks absence, which caused the delay of the presentation of the report, you see the chairperson of this committee is not here today, but the committee is functioning to its full optimum. Despite the absence of the chairperson, you can do the same. That's why I say, I am sure you have an infrastructure around you that you can use. Even if you're sick, you can go to the hospital. We can't say you shouldn't go and be admitted in the hospital and do the work. You've got people who can do the work in your absence, and the government machinery must function. Must not only wait for the 6 weeks when you are available, which I would like to know where you are, but I'm not going to put that question to you because I will then be challenging your person. I don't want to do that. So people, let us understand that today we are saying we are government of the people, by the people, and for the people. That is a profound statement. And this is what the ruling party is based on. If you go to the department as a head and you absent yourself for 6 weeks, and the whole function of department is affected, then it affects the whole government system. For your information, you don't know, maybe. It affects me here too. The reason why the chairperson of this committee is not here, but the committee is functioning fully, is because out of this, we have somewhere where we account. We've got to account to the chief way that today this committee was sitting and doing this, even if the chairperson was not. We can't say the committee did not sit because the chairperson was committed to some other things. We can't say that. So I'm appealing on behalf of this committee, the Honorable Makugela, Mama Gata, Honorable Webb, that this should be our message to this department. And we expect next time we will get something of substance. Rather than saying, your report has got no substance, and we turn you back. That is cost of the taxpayer. I'm one of the taxpayers. I'm sure I'm paying tax that I cannot even afford to pay. But I'm paying it. All of us as we sit here. And if we shackle you up and down on one issue, it causes more expenditure. And that is why the media is so much on us. It is because of department. Lack of delivery. Lack of that. 6 weeks absent. I want to rivet this thing into your mind that 6 weeks of your absent in the department, it really causes concern. Very much concern. Where were you? As I said, I'm not going to ask you that question. Thank you very much. I think this meeting... Yeah, I'm sorry. That's one thing I... The impeding factor here is that we are not forming a quorum, as we apologize from the beginning. Members are scattered all over. I think you people must also help us to increase the number of members of the NCOP. We are very few, and we are stretched to the last stretch of elasticity, where we can break at any time. Because we're so few, and we are doing the work of so many people in the NA. Every committee they have that size, we are having it. And we're only 54. There are about 400. How many of you? About 400. Mm-hmm. So we must be doing this. And that is why really I'm appealing to you that if you don't have that information, rather than giving us a thumbs up information, say, no, I don't have information. So we are not going to adopt and then I can accuse the department so that we are left alone and then we whisper on you now. We strategize on you. Thank you, DG. Thank you. Tell your minister, Kauta Mokoro say he must put pressure on me. I say he must put pressure on me. Google and Quinty. Tell him. Oh,
Thank you.